Listen. Billy Pilgrim says he went to Dresden, Germany on the day after his morphine night in the British compound in the center of the extermination camp for Russian prisoners of war. Billy woke up at dawn on that day in January. There were no windows in the little hospital, and the ghostly candles had gone out. So the only light came from the pinprick holes in the walls and from a sketchy rectangle that outlined the imperfectly fitted door. Little Paul Lazaro, with a broken arm, snored on one bed. Edgar Derby, the high school teacher who would eventually be shot, snored on the other. Billy sat up in bed. He had no idea what year it was or what planet he was on, whatever the planet's name was. It was cold. But it wasn't the cold that had awakened Billy. It was animal magnetism which was making him shiver and itch. It gave him profound aches in his musculature, as though he had been exercising hard. The animal magnetism was coming from behind him. If Billy had to guess as to the source, he would have said that there was a vampire bat hanging upside down on the wall behind him. Billy moved down toward the foot of his cot before turning to look at whatever it was. He didn't want the animal to drop into his face and maybe claw his eyes out or bite off his big nose. Then he turned. The source of the magnetism really did resemble a bat. It was Billy's impresario's coat with the fur collar. It was hanging from a nail. Billy now backed toward it again, looking at it over his shoulder, feeling the magnetism increase. Then he faced it, kneeling on his cot. Dared to touch it here and there. He was seeking the exact source of the radiations. He found two small sources, two lumps an inch apart and hidden in the lining. One was shaped like a pea, the other was shaped like a tiny horseshoe. Billy received a message carried by the radiations. He was told not to find out what the lumps were. He was advised to be content with knowing that they could work miracles for him, provided he did not insist on learning their nature. That was all right with Billy Pilgrim. He was grateful. He was glad. Billy dozed, awakened in the prison hospital again. The sun was high. Outside were Golgotha sounds of strong men digging holes for upright timbers in hard, hard ground. Englishmen were building themselves a new latrine. They had abandoned their old latrine to the Americans and their theater, the place where the feast had been held too. Six Englishmen staggered through the hospital with a pool table on which several mattresses were piled. They were transferring it to living quarters attached to the hospital. They were followed by an Englishman dragging his mattress and carrying a dartboard. The man with the dartboard was the blue fairy godmother who had injured little Paul Lazaro. He stopped by Lazaro's bed, asked Lazaro how he was. Lazaro told him he was going to have him killed after the war.
Oh? You made a big mistake, said Lazaro.
Anybody touches me, he better kill me, or I'm going to have him killed. The blue fairy godmother knew something about killing. He gave Lazaro a careful smile. There is still time for me to kill you, he said, if you really persuade me that it's the sensible thing to do.
Why don't you go fuck yourself?
Don't think I haven't tried, the blue fairy godmother answered. The blue fairy godmother left, amused and patronizing. When he was gone, Lazaro promised Billy and poor old Edgar Derby that he was going to have revenge, and that revenge was sweet. It's the sweetest thing there is, said Lazaro. People fuck with me, he said, and Jesus Christ, are they ever fucking sorry. I laugh like hell. I don't care if it's a guy or a dame. If the President of the United States fucks around with me, I fix him good. You should have seen what I did to a dog one time.
A dog? Said Billy.
Son of a bitch bit me. So I got me some steak, and I got me the spring out of a clock,
and I cut that spring up into little pieces. I put points on the ends of the pieces. They were sharp as razor blades. I stuck them into the steak, way inside, and I went past where they had the dog tied up. He wanted to bite me again. I said to him, "Come on, doggy, let's be friends. Let's not be enemies anymore. I'm not mad." He believed me. He did. I threw him the steak. He swallowed it down in one big gulp. I waited around for 10 minutes. Now Lazaro's eyes twinkled. Blood started coming out of his mouth. He started crying, and he rolled on the ground as though the knives were on the outside of him instead of on the inside of him. Then he tried to bite out his own insides. I laughed, and I said to him, "You got the right idea now. Tear your own guts out, boy. That's me in there with all those knives." So it goes. "Anybody ever asks you what the sweetest thing in life is?" said Lazaro. "It's revenge." When Dresden was destroyed later on, incidentally, Lazaro did not exult. He didn't have anything against the Germans, he said. Also, he said, he liked to take his enemies one at a time. He was proud of never having hurt an innocent bystander. "Nobody ever got it from Lazaro," he said, "who didn't have it coming." Poor old Edgar Derby, the high school teacher, got into the conversation now. He asked Lazaro if he planned to feed the blue fairy godmother clock springs and steak. "Shit," said Lazaro. "He's a pretty big man," said Derby, who, of course, was a pretty big man himself. "Size don't mean a thing." "You're going to shoot him?" "I'm going to have him shot," said Lazaro. "He'll get home after the war. He'll be a big hero. The dames will be climbing all over him. He'll settle down. Couple of years will go by, and then one day, there'll be a knock on his door. He'll answer the door, and there'll be a stranger out there. The stranger will ask him if he's so-and-so. When he says he is, the stranger will say, 'Paul Lazaro sent me,' and he'll pull out a gun and shoot his pecker off. The stranger will let him think a couple of seconds about who Paul Lazaro is and what life's gonna be like without a pecker. Then he'll shoot him once in the guts and walk away." So it goes. Lazaro said that he could have anybody in the world killed for $1,000 plus traveling expenses. He had a list in his head, he said. Derby asked him who all was on the list. And Lazaro said, "Just make fucking sure you don't get on it. Just don't cross me, that's all." There was a silence, and then he added, "And don't cross my friends." "You have friends?" Derby wanted to know. "In the war?" said Lazaro. "Yeah, I had a friend in the war. He's dead." So it goes. "That's too bad." Lazaro's eyes were twinkling again. "Yeah, he was my buddy on the boxcar. His name was Roland Weary. He died in my arms." Now he pointed to Billy with his one mobile hand. "He died on account of this silly cocksucker here. So I promised him I'd have this silly cocksucker shot after the war." Lazaro erased with his hand anything Billy Pilgrim might be about to say. "Just forget about it, kid," he said. "Enjoy life while you can. Nothing's gonna happen for maybe 5, 10, 15, 20 years. But let me give you a piece of advice. Whenever the doorbell rings, have somebody else answer the door." Billy Pilgrim says now that this really is the way he is going to die, too. As a time traveler, he has seen his own death many times, has described it to a tape recorder. The tape is locked up with his will and some other valuables in his safe deposit box at the Ilium Merchants National Bank and Trust, he says. "I, Billy Pilgrim," the tape begins, "will die, have died, and always will die on February 13th, 1976. At the time of his death, he says, he is in Chicago to address a large crowd on the subject of flying saucers and the true nature of time.
His home is still in Ilium. He has had to cross 3 international boundaries in order to reach Chicago. The United States of America has been balkanized, has been divided into 20 petty nations, so that it will never again be a threat to world peace. Chicago has been hydrogen bombed by angry Chinamen. So it goes. It's all brand new. Billy is speaking before a capacity audience in a baseball park, which is covered by a geodesic dome. The flag of the country is behind him. It is a Hereford bull on a field of green. Billy predicts his own death within an hour. He laughs about it, invites the crowd to laugh with him. "It's high time I was dead," he says. "Many years ago," he said, "a certain man promised to have me killed. He is an old man now, living not far from here. He has read all the publicity associated with my appearance in your fair city. He is insane. Tonight, he will keep his promise." There are protests from the crowd. Billy Pilgrim rebukes them. "If you protest, if you think that death is a terrible thing, then you have not understood a word I've said." Now he closes his speech, as he closes every speech, with these words: "Farewell, hello, farewell, hello." There are police around him as he leaves the stage. They are there to protect him from the crush of popularity. No threats on his life have been made since 1945. The police offer to stay with him. They are floridly willing to stand in a circle around him all night with their zap guns drawn. "No, no," says Billy serenely. "It is time for you to go home to your wives and children, and it is time for me to be dead for a little while, and then live again." At that moment, Billy's high forehead is in the crosshairs of a high-powered laser gun. It is aimed at him from the darkened press box. In the next moment, Billy Pilgrim is dead. So it goes. So Billy experiences death for a while. It is simply violet light and a hum. There isn't anybody else there. Not even Billy Pilgrim is there. Then he swings back into life again, all the way back to an hour after his life was threatened by Lazaro in 1945. He has been told to get out of his hospital bed and dress, that he is well. He and Lazaro and poor old Edgar Derby are to join their fellows in the theater. There they will choose a leader for themselves by secret ballot in a free election.